Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. On the face of it, the U.S. and Iran have agreed to a two-week ceasefire. There's not much agreement beyond that. Both sides have starkly different approaches and agendas. But one thing is certain, American military might has failed to subdue Iran. We are in a new geopolitical moment. Crosstalking the ceasefire, I'm joined by my guest, Morel Karimi, in Toronto. She is a lecturer at Toronto Metropolitan University, as well as author of The Iranian Green Movement of 2009. In Sydney, we have Ali Mamore. He is a research fellow at Deakin University and a former strategic communication advisor to the Iraqi prime minister. And in Rome, we cross to Marco Cornelos. He is a former Italian diplomat, as well as a Middle East advisor of prime ministers. All right, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Morel, let me go to you first in Toronto. I know it's quite early there. Well, much appreciated that we have you. I don't even really know where to begin here, to be honest with you. So let's start out with the word ceasefire. Is there a ceasefire? What is this ceasefire? And which ceasefire? If you take it from there, okay? I mean, they're all very simple, complex questions.
Well, I think there was nothing simple about this conflict to begin with. There are far too many parties involved. And it is not to mention that it's happening in the Middle East, in my opinion, one of the most complex regions in the world. And at the same time, I don't think it's entirely a ceasefire. It sounds like the beginning negotiations of a ceasefire. It's putting some of the hostilities in some areas on hold so that maybe some parties can engage in negotiations. And with the bombings going on in Lebanon and even intensifying, it is difficult to imagine that all parties involved are actually interested in these negotiations. It seems to me more like Israel is willing yet again and actually quite intent on derailing these negotiations. And reports are coming that, understandably, the United Arab Emirates is also doing the same thing. They're in this with Israel together because perhaps they don't feel like the United States is protecting them enough. And historically, the UAE has always felt threatened by the presence of Iran. Like, there is only a 45-minute flight from Dubai to Bandar Abbas in south of Iran. Not to mention, this is something I don't really see in many analysis. Many UAE, particularly in the Emirate of Dubai, citizens, or as they call them, the locals, they're originally Iranian.
Yeah.
They're originally Iranian, they're Shiite, some of them are Sunnis, there is a mix, and there is a very large expat population of Iranians that have lived there for generations, which is what is making it very complex. I understand, just like any other country, even though they're a very small country, there are multiple voices and multiple interests in that state in what the Al Nahyan family might be interested in, or the Al Maktoum family might be interested in, is not necessarily everybody else's, but there are those complexities as well.
Well, I mean, if I can go to Ali in Sydney again, thank you for joining us at the hour that you have. But is there enough will on the part of the United States to actually come to some kind of meaningful agreement? The problem is that the Americans, and particularly Donald Trump, they're always talking about a deal, a deal, a deal. If we look at the conflict in Ukraine, the Russians want a strategic decision. Iran wants a strategic decision, and that means serious negotiations, not a pause to continue the war, which, in my opinion, this is just a pause towards that end. Go ahead, Ali.
Yeah, exactly. It seems to me that we are before a very fragile ceasefire and far away from any kind of deal. In fact, Trump had a golden opportunity before the war. The deal that Iranians accepted before the war, per the statement of the Omani foreign minister, who was the mediator, it was a golden opportunity, very yep. much better than 2015 deal. And Trump could really declare victory, saying that I brought them on their knees. They accepted it about 1% enrichment, which is like a just symbolic enrichment. They accepted monitoring by U.S. Monitors coming to their own territory, which also was a significant thing from Iranian side. But anyway, that didn't happen. And now when we compare between the 15-point proposal put on the table by U.S. and the 10-point proposal by Iranians, there is a huge gap between them, and I can't see any possibility that they could come together.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Ali. Let me go to Marco in Rome. Donald Trump admitted that the United States was interested in, you know, the reasonable 10 points from Iran, and then within a day or less than a day, he was talking about his own 15 points here. This is another diplomacy through deception, Marco.
Well, frankly speaking, I don't know what to think, because okay. first of all, I have no clear idea of which are the 10 points we are talking about, because I've been floating around many different versions of the 10 points, even if there was, from my point of view, the more reliable one was the one that was issued by the Supreme National Security Council of Iran in a statement made yesterday. And frankly speaking, I could barely believe to my eyes when I read that Trump considered that points a reasonable base for discussion, considering what are the 15 points that Trump had issued a few days or weeks earlier were just completely the opposite. So I was quite skeptical that with such a big distance between the 15 points on one side, 10 points on the other, where this could be meshed to find a reasonable agreement.
But that's the whole point here. Murrell, let me go back to you in Toronto. I mean, when Trump sent that out on Truth Social, I read it as just desperation. He would grab anything to get a pause, not a ceasefire. He just wants to, you know, freeze frame everything and figure out what to do next. That's what it looks like to me. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Let me go. You're right. He could get everything. But the point is the following. We are in the similar situation of the ceasefire on the deal in Russia, where the Ukrainians and the Westerners were asking for a pause in the conflict, and the Russians were not ready to accept that because they wanted a permanent solution.
Well,
case of Iran, it was exactly the same situation.
Hang on, Marco, let me go to Toronto. You want to field that question? Go ahead, Murrell.
Okay, so there are two things that we have to pay attention to here. First of all, Trump's psyche. He is not one for prolonged permanent diplomacy. He's not for that kind of, you know, hard, consistent work. At the same time, his administration doesn't have that capacity either. I mean, we cannot, and I can't believe we have to sit here as serious analytical people and bring this up, but you cannot really expect serious work from Secretary Hegseth. He is not a serious diplomat. He just is not. And he unfortunately has a lot of say in this. So we don't see, Trump is not willing to put in that work. He always wants a quick, like you said, deal. And that's not how diplomacy works. That's not how war works. And so what happens is, He entered this war reluctantly for a variety of reasons, including the Israelis providing, let's just call it bolstered intelligence, for lack of a better...
No, why don't we just call it a PowerPoint presentation? Because that's what it
presentation,
was.
Presentation, yeah, and wishful thinking. And he bought into it because he thought, and they understand this, the Israelis understand this, and they cater to his ego. Oh, listen, we're going to go into this within 2 or 3 weeks. You're going to have this massive win that, and you can continue saying no other president in the history has done what I've done, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
He went into it, and then he realized it's not that simple. He realized what many of us have been saying for so long. And so, and then when he realized that the Strait of Hormuz can actually
be
remain closed by Iranians, and they have the capacity to hold it closed, he, I have to put it in these terms, he threw a temper tantrum.
Yeah.
And that didn't work. That really didn't work with Iranians, because despite what I've heard all my life from Iranians, some Iranians, from some media, that a whole bunch of mullahs are going, they're not going to be able to run the country, they have. They have been able to, at least for, when it comes to international relations, they have managed to carve their own space. And they've done it to their own benefit. It might not have been to the benefit of Iranian people, but to certain class, it has worked. And Trump doesn't understand that. He doesn't. He never thought that he would get so deep and would have to deal with such astute diplomats. And so He just wants to pull out, but at the same time, he doesn't have the capacity to accept defeat or engage in serious negotiations.
He can't escape the trap that he's gone into. He's not in a position just to simply walk away. I mean, the Iran has him by the short and curlies, as they say, and so that's why I don't think this is far from over here. All right, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the so-called ceasefire. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelle. To remind you, we're discussing the so-called ceasefire. Okay, let's go back to Ali in Sydney. Let's talk about where we are right now. There's a new sheriff in town. The Gulf is controlled by Iran. It was open freely for 47 years. Now it is under the control of Iran. They're talking about some kind of mutual control with Oman. But that is a huge political change in the region. And I would say it shows the return of Iran as a major power, where it's been, has been denied by the Americans and the Israelis for so long. How would you judge their strategic thinking during this conflict here? Because I have to say, compared to the Americans and even the Israelis, it's nothing less than brilliant.
Yeah, well, in fact, U.S. and Israel started this war to stop Iran from being a nuke power. But in reality, they handed Iran a new kind of power, which is not less than a nuke power. Controlling Hormuz Strait proved that this is a significant power or tool for Iranians that will use it as a leverage in three areas. First of all, as a source of income, which is not less than the oil. Second of all, as a guarantee for not having any kind of war or hostility coming against them again. And third of all, I guess they will use it to turn around the U.S. sanction and just finish this sanction completely, because they will go with negotiation with different countries, give them some kind of privilege or exception from these tolls, and in return having some kind of investment. So it seems to me, and it's very unlikely that Iranians will give up this after they proved and they show that they can control it. And Oman is also are happy because they will get paid with no any effort. And they haven't shown any kind of objection so far. So it seems to me this is a significant result for Iranians. If Iranians come out of this war, even just with this privilege from the 10-point plan, just this one alone, it's a big victory for Iranians.
You know, Marco, President Trump likes to use the phrase about who has the cards. In this situation, who has the better cards, the high cards, Iran or the United States and its partner Israel?
Well, for what we have seen so far, the better cards, or I wouldn't say who has the better cards. I would say who used better the cards that he owns. And in such situation, I would say that Iran, that has apparently until 28th of February, less cards, militarily speaking, than the other two powers, has been using his cards much better than them. And we have been harassed as the international community for almost 20 years, at least, by the US and Israel about the nuclear weapons that Iran was trying to achieve. And then as our colleague from Sydney revealed, and everybody's seen that, Iran showed that he has a nuclear power,
yep.
has a nuclear weapons, and yep. it's the Strait of Hormuz closure yep. Yep. that is capable to send all global economy in disarray. And I haven't seen, at least in the last years, in the last 20, 30 years, a conflict that was able to cause so much damages toward the economy like the one we are witnessing now. Not even the conflict between Russia and Ukraine reach such level of the destabilizing consequence in the world economies as we are watching now. And this is something the Iranians have been very, very clever in their so-called asymmetric warfare or hybrid war, has been very, very clever in using. So far, if we have to put an Olympic podium, first place Iran, second, I don't know, between Israel and the United States, and the third as well. So that is the sad situation. And as to the ceasefire, if I may add one word, now there's a big discussion if Lebanon is included or not in the ceasefire.
Well, hold on, Marco. Let me throw that to our guest in Toronto. How much does Israel have a say in this? Because it looks like they had a great deal of say in initiating this war through a very passive Trump. But Trump is ultimately responsible for it. He is the president of the United States. This finger pointing, I think, is childish. So, you know, how can this move forward here? I mean, does Israel have a say in a veto in all of this?
I don't think they do. Not after, like you said, Trump is in a deep mess right now, and he is the one who is going to need to dig himself out of this. And with the midterms coming and with coming to light of the fact that Israeli intelligence and their analyses of both potential leadership for Iran and Iran's diplomatic and military capabilities being absolutely wrong. I don't think Trump would be trusting Netanyahu as much. And should he
Morale,
feel
I mean,
like...
I, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but, you know, he's sending Kushner and Witkoff into as part of the delegation.
But he's sending a babysitter with them. He's sending J.D. Vance there, and he's going to be, and he was not in favor of this war to begin
That's
with.
True.
I do think the Israelis have the influence that they used to have. They're going to push, and they might succeed in certain areas. But I think if Trump feels that he can come out of this victorious and Israel is the only, and like Lebanon actually, is the only sore subject, there he's going to tell them to, you know, to push back on Israel, and he's not going to listen to them. And Iran, I feel they're going to push hard on Lebanon because they have lost many of their axis of resistance allies in the region, and they would push hard on Hezbollah. And they're in a position to negotiate. And unfortunately, Trump is really not, doesn't seem like he's in a position emotionally, mentally, and militarily to push back on this. And I keep pushing back, I keep bringing up the notion of his ego and his emotion and his psyche, because for this president, that really matters. That plays a lot, unfortunately, into international politics and his decision-making.
Well, no, this has essentially destroyed his presidency, and he knows that now. Okay, Ali, how is this all going to work? Because we can, you know, there's words like pause and ceasefire, preliminaries to a ceasefire to a pause. I mean, how does this move forward? Okay, I mean. Because I brought up the issue of Israel. I, given history, Israel is just going to do what it wants to do, and no American president has ever pushed back. Donald Trump still hasn't. Ali.
Yeah, it's a pause of hostility between U.S. and Iran, but it's the beginning of significant crisis for other actors, and on the top of them is Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu in person. I think Israel is the biggest loser of this war. Israel also had a great opportunity before this war, during the 1 year of the ceasefire with Hezbollah, to just go in peace with the region and set a new reality in the region. And everyone was ready to attend to Abraham Accord if just Israel accepted minimum thing for Palestinians. But they have become very arrogant, talking about the greater Israel, including a part of Syria, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan. And that gave the entire world a different reality and realization about this state. So it seems to me, for Netanyahu in particular, it's his end of his political career. He will face some kind of disaster inside Israel, and I don't see how long he could continue the hostility in Lebanon with all this pressure on him from the entire international community and U.S. As well. And from Iranian's side, they are very clear about the unity of the front, what they call it. Yep. In the past, they had the policy of separation of a front. So each front has its own policy. Now they are on the, like, they have been in the, during the last month, they have been on the existential threat. So they came all together, and they know they will come out of this war and survive, or otherwise Israel will come after them one by one, and they will face some kind of existential threat. So they are standing all together. And we know that Iran still has some other cards that it did not use. Bab al-Mandab have not been used during this crisis. If Iran could close Bab al-Mandab, the economic disaster would be so much worse. Even Hormuz wasn't completely closed. And also we know that Iranians also had more advanced missile that they did not use. The 2 tons Khorramshahr missile have not been used. The maximum was 500 kilograms. So in my opinion, Iranians managed the war with a very calculated and wise management. And they still preserve some other options for future hostility. So okay. In general, it seems to me that we are going toward some kind of fragile ceasefire and with more leverage for Iranians.
We're rapidly running out of time. Marco, is this the end of American military influence in the region? We got 40 seconds.
Well, too early to say, but I would say that the capability of the United States to inflict a regime change through the use of their weapons has been tested once again with Iran, and it failed.
Well, on that note, let's see how we move forward here. Again, I'm not convinced we can define the moment we're in, ceasefire, pause. It's something in between, but we'll find out very, very soon. I want to thank my guests in Toronto, Sydney, and in Rome. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.